Pip installs packages. Or maybe package installer for Python? I forgot to ask Stefan if he knows what it really stands for. Regardless, pip is an invaluable tool when developing with Python. A lot of people know pip as a way to install third-party packages from PyPI.org. You can also use pip to install from other indexes, or is it indices? You can also use pip to install a package in a local directory. That's the part I want to jump in and explore with Stefan Bedul. The way pip installs from a local directory is about to change, and I wanted to talk to Stefan to see if I need to care about the change or not. It turns out, even if you don't need to know the details of this, the story is fascinating.
Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics.
Welcome to Test and Code. I'm super happy to have Stefan Bedul on the show. So thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Now, before we start, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm Belgian, and maybe my French accent is showing, so apologies about that. So I've been a professional software engineer by passion and profession since about 30 years now. And like 10 years ago, I've been fortunate to be a founding partner for a European software project company named Axon, where we focused on crafting solutions based on open source and open standard technologies. And so that joined my passion for open source, and that's my main occupation these days. And I'm also an elected board member of the Odoo Community Association, which is an open source community creating and maintaining a large number of add-ons for the Odoo ERP. And last year, I think in April, the PIP team asked me if I would like to get the commit bit, which I accepted. And I'm now trying to help as best as I can. Yeah.
You've been doing a lot of open source in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Is that kind of when you started working with Python, or have you been using Python for longer?
Oh, I've been using Python since, I think, version 1.4 or something.
Okay.
Back in the 90s.
Okay, nice.
So, yeah. Wow. So I'm a very long-time user of Python, but I never really had the chance to get involved in the community for various reasons. And so, yeah.
Okay, so you've been involved with pip for a while then? Or at least for the last year or so.
Yeah, and I think I started becoming more involved in pip and the packaging community like 5 years ago or something, because we wanted to solve basically installation problems in the Odoo community. The thing is that we maintain like maybe 3,000 different extension modules for Odoo, and there are dependencies between all those modules, and telling our user which module to install to get a working system was a bit complex, because our modules are spread in like 200 different GitHub repositories, and so telling them you need to install that one and that one and that one was really difficult. So together with the OCA board, we decided to publish our add-ons on PyPI. And so I started working on that, and actually I ate for various reasons all kinds of edge case and little issues in Python packaging. And yeah, there are some of them for historical reasons. And the issues I had were mostly about the wheel building process, around working with VCS references in requirements or editable installs, for instance. And so I didn't really find any tool helping for that. So I wanted to contribute as upstream as possible, and so I started contributing to pip to help fix those. And I must say the team was pretty friendly, and so I could do some fixes, make some improvement. Like something I contributed back then is a mechanism to cache the wheels you build locally from a VCS reference. So when you do pip install get plus HTTPS, blah, 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 with a commit hash in the reference, pip is going to cache it. So if you reinstall it, it's going to go faster. Also, at some point, I got interested in pip freeze. Also, in relation with VCS reference, because in that case, pip freeze back then just did not work. It didn't spit out the original VCS reference. And for that, I was told, okay, that's an interoperability problem, so you have to write a pep. And so I went on, and it took a year. It was quite an experience. But then eventually it became pep 6.1.0, which was accepted. And so I implemented that in pip. And so recently also I found like there was kind of consensus around the modern editable installs. At least I thought so. So I proposed to write a pep for that one, which I co-authored with Daniel Holtz. And that was also quite a ride with a competing pep that was quite interesting, but in the end it was accepted. And so, yeah, when I have time these days, I'm trying to implement that in pip, for instance. And now nice. Quite a short list of improvements, a new feature I would like to add to pip, or things that are a bit loose. Like, for instance, you know that everyone is saying you should never do setup.pyinstall because you need to do pip install, right? But actually, behind your back, pip is actually doing setup.pyinstall in many, many situations. And that's something we want to change in pip, to go to a process where we build a wheel and then install it. But it takes time. These are important improvements to modernize the packaging ecosystem. But it takes time because we have to keep compatibility and care for deprecations and so on. But it's really fun and quite interesting.
That's so cool. I think I got the right person on the line then. One of the things that surprised, I've been using, I feel like I use and abuse pip a lot partly because I work in a situation where we're behind a firewall and sometimes with needing to set up proxies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think as a company, we've solved that already. But for a while, a kind of a hacky solution was to just download all the stuff, like do a pip download and download everything that we needed into just a directory somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then just point all the pip installs through that instead, using the index flag or something, and then just pointing it there. Mm-hmm. Or not an index.
Yeah, with find links.
Find links, that's it. Yeah. When I was using setup tools, I would do the editable installs all the time. Of course, now I've switched and I'm using pyproject.toml and flit often, and editable installs don't really work anymore. If you try to editable install pip install -e with a directory, and if it's a flit package, it'll pop up and say, you can't do it right now. It's a setup tools thing.
Yeah, that's correct. And hopefully in 3 months, it will be.
Oh, really?
Possible. Yeah.
Oh, that's so quick. I'm so excited. Even with the flit-based project, without the editable, you can say pip install and then a directory.
Yeah.
And it'll do it correctly. It does it great. However, when I do that, I get this big deprecation warning. And that's, that was the impetus to try to get somebody on to explain this and to try to, it looks scary. And I just want to know, is it scary? Do I need to worry about it? So I'm going to go ahead and read it. So if I do like pip install in a directory name, and I usually give it a path like /foo or something, it says deprecation of future pip version will change local packages to be built in place without first copying to a temporary directory. We recommend that you use --- use feature in tree build, I think, to test your packages with this new behavior before it becomes default. Pip 21.3 will remove support for this functionality. You can find discussions at, and it gives a link to an issue. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I assume you're familiar with this.
Yep.
What does this mean, and do I have to care about it?
Yeah, so first thing, it's totally valid to do pip install of a local directory, right? You don't need to worry about that, and it will continue to be supported. So that's the
first. Okay, good. Because I have that instruction in my book, and I want to make sure I can keep printing that. So
yeah,
okay.
No, so no worries. It will continue to work. The thing is that actually most people don't even need to worry about that deprecation warning, because the vast majority of users will not be impacted when we change the behavior of that particular installation mode. And actually, I think I need to explain what pip does when you do pip install of a directory.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, currently, when you do that, pip is first trying to do a copy of the directory and all its content and subdirectories to a temporary location, and then doing the installation from there. All right.
Okay.
And it turns out that that sounds easy, but it turns out that actually it's not. And over time, people have raised all kinds of problems with that approach. And so what we are changing, and I can explain after why we are doing this. What we are changing is that instead of copying to a temporary directory and installing from there, now the installation will take place from the original directory.
Okay. Right?
And what that means is that if your project is using setup tools, for instance, is that you do, you know, when you do a setup.py or a pip install of a setup tools or setup.py install of a setup tools project, setup tools is creating a build directory locally and is creating a .egg info directory locally. And that's the thing that will change, is that for setup tools project, people will start seeing those those work or artifacts appearing in their project directory when they do this kind of pip install. That's the difference. If you use Flit, for instance, you will not see that, because Flit is not creating artifacts locally to do its build. So if you use Flit, actually, it will not make any difference.
Okay.
All right. So maybe you're set already in your case.
But we use both.
Yeah. And actually, last year or something, there was a try to make the switch, the switch of behavior in pip without a deprecation phase. But then we discovered that was creating some problem for some workflows. Like, for instance, people installing from a read-only directory, then setup tools cannot create those artifacts, and it's breaking. And there was even more exotic situations where doing successive builds from inside, like a Docker image with different Python versions, would create slightly different artifacts that could be incompatible, and setup tools would not detect it, and that could lead to invalid wheels and things like that. And so we decided to do a deprecation period to warn people that something was changing and that they should pay attention to it and prepare for the change, which could come with the October release or maybe later if we discover other problems along the way.
Okay, so this 21.3 is supposed to come around in October?
Yeah, yeah.
That's just right around the corner. So cool.
Pip is doing 4 releases per year. So yeah, the next one is in October.
Okay, so mostly I'm getting out of it is I personally don't need to worry about it. However, if you're doing something like kind of interesting, like from a read-only directory, that seems different. Is that going to work then, or is a read-only directory just not going to work in the future?
It really depends on your build backend. If you use a build backend like Flit, which only creates artifacts in temporary directories and so on, and manage temporary directories by itself, it will work. With setup tools, it will not work. So that's something. Okay. That's a workflow we are breaking, and we know we are breaking. And okay. I'll explain why we are doing it, because I think it's important. And in the PIP team, we don't like to do breaking changes. It's always PIP. I mean, it's important to give stability to the community. But in this case, basically, that was the only possible solution. And in that case, either setup tools will have to evolve to support that use case, or people will have to copy themselves to a writable directory and then do the installation from there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically that brings me to the reason we are doing that. And I think it's worth explaining for the community so people understand why we had to do that. And yeah, actually there are several reasons. The first one is performance. Actually, we got many feedback in the pip issue tracker that doing pip install of a local directory was slow in some situation. And maybe you have not seen it, but if you have, like, for instance, a project that has a multi-gigabyte .git directory, and even if it could be a large project, a project with a large Git history, if you do pip install from the root of that project, it's going to copy everything to a temporary directory. It's going to copy that multi-gigabyte Git directory to your temp location, and it's slow, and people get out of this space in their temp location and stuff like that. And I say, well, why? There's no reason. So that's one thing. And actually, we do have hacks in pip to ignore the .tox or .nox directories, because those tend to be big and we don't need them to build.
That was going to be my next question, is if because it's like my .tox directory is right there also, and it gets pretty big.
But we do have an exception, a specific exception for .tox and .nox in the pip code base to work around that. And to be honest, that's a bit of a hack. And people are also asking, but can't you ignore also the Git directory? And we say, well, no, we can't, because some projects use like setup tools SCM to generate version numbers from Git tags. For that one, they need the Git directory to do a correct build. So we cannot ignore the Git directory. So that's one reason, performance. And then the other reason is sometimes your Python project is inside a larger project, like when you have, an application like Blender or something, which has a Python bindings, and they typically live in a subdirectory of the main project. Mm. And to build the Python binding of such projects, they usually need something that is not inside the Python module directory, but just a sibling directory or something. And if we copy the directory where the Python project is, we don't get those sibling directories, and also the build fails. And there are many situations like that. And long story short, basically, there is no way for pip to know how to do this copy to a temporary directory correctly in all cases. It's just impossible.
Yeah.
And that's the reason, and there was lots of discussion, but that's the reason we reached this conclusion that we must just stop doing that and basically push that problem of knowing what to copy to somewhere else. And that somewhere else can be the user. It can be the build backend. If you do a custom build backend with PEP 517, you know what you need. And if you want your build to work in a read-only directory, well, you know exactly what you need to copy to a temp location to do your build and things like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the story.
Yeah, all the different corner cases.
Gosh. Yeah. And that's an interesting story, because I think when that was done at the beginning, I was not there, we could not find in the history exactly why this was done. But basically, we can imagine that it's really to allow working from read-only directory or avoiding leaving build artifacts in the source directory. And those are good reasons. But the problem is that that was done at a time where pip and setup tools were really tied together.
Yeah.
And today, the community is trying to untie those with PEP 517 and so on. And basically, my conclusion is that that feature is useful, but basically it was implemented in the wrong tool. It was implemented in PIP, whereas it should have been implemented in the build backend.
Oh, yeah. I mean, similar to Flit, setup tools could have had an option to copy it into a different directory. Or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Another reason I'm glad we had this discussion. Another reason why I wanted to talk about it openly is because of I had a couple people comments, like, because like I said, I put a sample project in my book, and I tell people to, you know, pip install with the ./ or, you know, to the path, mm-hmm. so that you can get the local directory installed. And that will kind of disable pip from trying to find it on PyPI. Mm-hmm. And a couple people, not too many, but a couple people have been surprised and said, I don't understand why you're doing that, because pip is only for PyPI packages. You know, that's just a misunderstanding. That's how a lot of people use it, and is the only, I guess a lot of people just use it for grabbing things off PyPI, but you can use it for so much more. So.
Yeah. The way I like to see pip is a command line interface for the database of install distribution in a Python environment. I think like you can install things in it, you can uninstall, you can upgrade, but the source of your packages is not necessarily PyPI, of course. It can be local index, it could be local directories, it can be a VCS you can install from a Git URL. There are quite a lot of support in pip for that.
And a lot of companies, like my company, is doing a local thing that looks like PyPI, but it's basically a mirror into PyPI for things that are not there, and then it caches them.
Yeah.
But it also has local stuff and company only things that we don't want to share with the rest of the world. So,
yeah, that's important. Yeah. Actually, pip is a very flexible tool. I don't think it will ever grow to be something like poetry or pipenv, something like full environment management. That's not the scope at the moment. but I personally see as a very important building block, maybe to build such higher level tools. Tools where you can afford using a CLI to manage your install and install and install stuff. Pip could be the right building block to help build such higher level tools. Yeah.
One of the fun things that's happened since I've been paying attention to Pip is the column Pip list turning into a column list or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it also went through a phase where it was a sort of a warning showed up, or I can't remember if it was a warning or just a notice to people that that this was going to change. Just be aware of it. Is that because I assume this is because a lot of people are using PipList in scripts and in other cases where it might mess things up if the output changed at all?
Yeah, we have to be very, very careful because people do all sorts of things with Pip. And I think at the time, parsing the output of PipList was a thing people were doing. In the meantime, PipList has a JSON output. So I hope people are not parsing the column output anymore. And if they do, they really need to switch to the JSON output. Because, like, for instance, when we support modern editable, that's something I was working on this week, and the pip column format will change because we are adding a column with the editable project location.
Oh, cool.
When you do a flit install minus symlink, for instance, Pip will recognize that and display the project location with in the pip list column. People should not parse that column output, but then there is the JSON output.
That's so cool. I didn't know that you could do JSON output. That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. PipList minus minus format equal JSON, and
There's all sorts of goodies in here. So people should really do like PipList dash dash help and see all the cool things you can do.
Yeah, it can do quite. And one long term project I have, I don't know, still need to be discussed with other Pip maintainers. It's like, for instance, having a richer JSON output to get like metadata on the project. So you have a way to kind of query what is installed in very much details and more details than today, where you just have basically the name and the version and limited information.
I didn't even know you could do pip list dash o and list your outdated
things. That's a cool one too.
Oh, that's neat. Sweet. Yeah. Cool. So many, I mean, people definitely, and I'm one of them, take Pip for granted. It's just part of my tool chain. And there's so much power in there. So very cool. Well, I learned a whole bunch. And so thank you so much, Stefan, for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Test & Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.